For over 20 years, your locally owned Papa John's has been delivering pizza to your doorstep. With today's climate, they are diligently working every day to provide safe food delivery to their Eugene community. It's why Papa John's introduced the no-contact delivery system. Download their app, select Leave at My Door, and your pizza will arrive at your door with no contact from the driver. Payment and tip are already handled when you place the order in the app online. Their team is working hard for you. No contact delivery. PapaJohns.com.
Take KUJZ 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go at 95.3thescore.com. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
And we welcome you to another day. It happens to have a Wednesday in front of it. So welcome to the Wednesday edition. Crunch time and sports talk right here. 95.3 The Score. Just looking to grind out another one. We'll wrap up the first hour with a dueling crunch exchange. I think Nick and I have three possible angles to hit each other with. At the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour, Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network will check in, see what he's been up to. And like I threatened you with yesterday, but you guys got me busy. I've been busy. Our Ronnie Lott interview from 2014. I've been dying to hear that. It was just it was an interesting time in that the Ducks had opened the season and beat South Dakota by like 1,000. Michigan State was ranked 7. Oregon was ranked 3. It was ESPN Game Day was here. It was Gus Johnson and Fox National TV with he and Charles Davis here. Expectations were obviously high with Marcus, looked as one of the Heisman favorites. And we got a call that week. We used to connect with the Pac-12 Network, and they were in their infancy back then. And they were like, oh, Ronnie Lott's available. Would you like to talk to him? Give me a moment to think of. Yes. Just the irony. I'm usually a fan of the people we have on for the work they do, but Lott happens to be one of my all-time favorite players, any sports, no qualification. And so we got it done, and here we are. So what else you guys got up your sleeves? Good contributions, by the way, and as always, you can hit us up 284-8571. It's your Oregon fuel injection hotline. Could also try us on the text line, 321-0824. Yeah, I'm right. Yeah, that's the ticket. And on Twitter at 953 The Score for the station, for the show, and yours truly at Sports Talk 953 for Nick at Rick Nodgers. I guess it's ESPN right now is replaying the last round of the 1986 Masters. And maybe it's not the last round. Maybe it's they're just playing the tournament. And right now they're on 18 on Saturday. So I think I know how this one is going to turn out. And hopefully I won't get too distracted. One of my favorite events here. Last night, I think we come to certain realizations during this pandemic that we're all trying to cope with in the best possible way we can. So I mentioned last week that I had not had ESPN on in our studio, which is usually kind of normally if it's a – this time of year, there would be a golf tournament on. Well, actually, yeah, tomorrow would be the Masters starting, Tiger defending his title. But even as you get into May and June, if it's not a major, you know, sometimes I'll come in on a Thursday or Friday, put on the golf channel, just see who's doing what in the tournament. Obviously, when baseball starts, we've got the MLB network. So if there's a game on, if the Mariners are on, sometimes we'll have Root, obviously, when there are other major events. But ESPN is a frequent visitor to our monitor, and as you might imagine, my TV set at home. So last night about 9:30, I was flipping around, and I was watching Beverly Hills Cop, having a couple glasses of wine for the 8 millionth time, hanging with my wife and three doggies. And so if you have Xfinity or Comcast, whatever you want to refer to it as, if you have the updated box and the updated remote and you hit last, it shows you what channel you were watching and the previous eight. And I think for the first time ever, ESPN was not among the last stations. Because even during a night where I might not be following sports under normal circumstances, I'll do the check-in because there's a game on, or maybe if it's after 10 o'clock, see what's on SportsCenter while we're, you know, resetting Netflix or going back into our DVR queue. But I just looked and I went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Wow. I was like, that is a sign of the times for sure. For sure. All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. After yesterday's show, I got an email from a gentleman who said a fun segment or something to kind of kick around and maybe accumulate answers during the course of a show would be substantial rule changes in sports over the years and what had the biggest impact. And some good suggestions. Got some on Twitter as well as the text line. Certainly, I mean, you could delve really deep. I mean, the legalization of the forward pass in football, which dates back to 1906. The designated hitter, 1973, pretty substantial. And I learned something. I don't remember this. I'm sure when it happened, it was news. It was 1980. Did you guys know the National League took a vote and voted down adding the designated hitter 40 years ago? Got to admit, did not know that. The height of the pitcher's mound. I don't know that there's been a bigger impact rule than just when the NBA in the 50s added the shot clock. I mean, you know, back then, I think the first NBA game ever was the Toronto Huskies and the New York Knicks. I don't think either team broke 50. But now all of a sudden, you know, you think of when college added first, it was a 45-second shot clock, then a 35, now a 30. And, I mean, Dean Smith of North Carolina was notorious for going with his four corners offense. Just kick it around, kill the clock, kill the clock. I mean, they get a 3-point lead with 11 minutes to go in the game and, try and ice it. If you ever seen the highlight of the 1977 National College Championship Final where Al McGuire and Marquette won it, you see him orchestrating, hands up, go four corners. Kind of a motion towards him, run the offense. And, that was up there. So 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Feel like jumping on in with some of those. And
I have a suggestion, Steve, or a rule to contemplate. I'm not sure when it happened, or maybe it's been around for forever, but I feel like it hasn't. But what about being able to advance the ball up court in the NBA, like after a basket when you call a timeout? Because being able to create just a singular shot when there's, you know, less than a second to go from, you know, you're already halfway up the court. That's significantly changed plenty of results in games. It won the Blazers a playoff series against the Rockets. I don't know if that, well, that was just a play out of a timeout. I don't know if that was advancing the ball, but that's giving teams chances to, you know, extend the game, win a game, go to overtime, something like that. It's just got to be pretty impactful, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think that I remember. Okay. I could date back, and I could hear people going, "You old!" Christmas Day, 1969, we were at the Garden, getting yelled at by my aunts and uncles. My dad and I were like, "Screw it, the Knicks are on the way to the championship." We went for a matinee to the Garden, and the Knicks were playing the Detroit Pistons, and a guy by the name of Walt Bellamy hit a scoop shot in the lane with 1 second to go. The Knicks called timeout, and with a timeout, they were allowed to advance the ball to midcourt. So that's been a rule since at least then. The deal is you have to have the timeout, or you had to inbound. I mean, but, oh, no, that's a substantial one. And now I'm trying to figure out what I would Google, just advance the ball, NBA, because there's a different rule in college, and then there's – if you don't have a timeout or you try to inbound it and are unsuccessful and it gets batted away, then you can't run along the end line or something like that. But no, that, yeah, I mean, you know, think about it with 2 seconds to go, whether, like you said, having an opportunity to run a play from 45 feet from the bucket instead of 94 feet from the bucket. So, yeah, I like it. I like it. So chime on in. And let me tell you, you could do a deep dive on this. I mean, I did not know this. So they call it the pitch that killed. In the summer of 1920, the Yankees are playing Cleveland, and Carl Mays beamed shortstop of the Indians, Ray Chapman, and he died the next day in a hospital. And because of that, they banned the spitball because they said it wasn't properly – that you weren't properly able to control it. I had known the story of Chapman and Mays for forever. It's part of baseball lore. I did not realize it led to a rule change like that. But because that I guess you would call it the grandfather rule, there were 17 pitchers in the major leagues at the time who used spitballs, and they were authorized to continue using it. And at the same time, umpires for the first time were told remove a ball from play once it got dirty or discolored. I'm like, I'd never heard that. And you want to talk about an interesting part of baseball history, like, whoa. The two-point play in the NFL, it always existed in the AFL, and in college it began in 1858. In 1958, just as you're if you're driving around, if you're listening, just as a wild guess, when do you think the NFL, the National Football League, implemented the two-point rule, where I guess I should just explain it for clarity. Go for a touchdown. You don't just have to kick an extra point. You go for two. You know, obviously down 16, down 8. 1994. I mean, that's a relatively new rule. Like I said, if it existed during the entirety of the AFL from 1960 through and including 1969, then they didn't use it. And because they all fell under the shield, the National Football League umbrella, from 1970 through and including the 93 season. Somebody, good one from Twitter, 284-8571. Nick, I think we talked about this the other day. You brought it up. No more collisions with the catcher. That's a really recent rule. I mean, there's no way that's more than 4 or 5 years old, right?
No, I think it was 2013 or 2014, so it's closer to 6 or 7 years. But yeah, eliminating that from the game kind of made it safer, I think, for everybody to kind of realize that, oh, yeah, it doesn't make sense that nobody else can kind of run over anybody. Why should home plate be any different? So changing that, maybe, I don't know how big of a change it necessarily had on baseball, but it certainly has... it's had I don't know. I think like physically changing the field of play by like lowering the mound or, you know, moving the mound back, or that's going to have a bigger impact on the game than, you know, eliminating collisions at the plate kind of thing. Because it just I think it's good that it's gone because you don't see it anywhere else. So why does it need to be in the game at all kind of thing?
No, it's what you would call a situational impact, not something that you see every day or even every week.
Right.
But it's something to think about. Somebody said the alley-oop. Now, I don't know that there was ever a rule where you couldn't alley-oop in basketball. I mean, you know, it's been going on forever. But, there were a couple of really interesting ones. By the way, in college, the shot clock – not implemented until the 85-86 season. And that was a 45-second clock. Then, so the 85-86, and you always wonder how it would have impacted. So Louisville, with Purvis I Never Get Nervous Ellison, won the national title in 86. Then they by the way, the NBA shot clock, a bunch of you are saying that's as substantial as anything. I mean, it's basketball, and they changed the way the game is played. 1954-55 season. Then they took 10 seconds off the college shot clock for 93-94, which led to the championship of Arkansas. Nolan Richardson's, Corliss Williamson, that great team with their 40 minutes of hell, just pressure, 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 pressure. And then recently, 2015-16, they pared it down to 30 seconds. All right, here's one that I really want you to think about, because I looked at this and I was like, So basketball, the NBA was born for the 1946-47 season, but there was college basketball, there was other leagues, and in basketball, goaltending was allowed until 1944. I'll tell you what, you know, you talk about, I would like to see a game with a bunch of guys who could jump out of the gym play with goaltending allowed right now. What do you think the final score would be in that game?
I mean, basketball would be so fun. Like, that would be, because it would turn into like a pitcher's duel where it'd be like, oh, wow, they got the shot in. I can't believe it went. They scored a bat. Like, the 3-point line means nothing because all of those shots are just easily blockable.
Oh, right, right.
You just have the tallest guy you can possibly find and you just say, look, stand around the basket, but, you know, keep moving around so you don't get a 3-second violation or three in the key, whatever that's called. Just stand really close to the basket and just swat the crap out of anything that gets near the rim at all. Like, basketball scores would be like 2-0 because one guy would come in and he would come flying by and just dunk on the tall guy, knock the tall guy over, and that was the only tall guy that team had, and you know, that was the end of the game or something. Like, basketball would be just the most ridiculous version of the sport ever.
I'm just thinking, like, a guy like Mutombo in his prime, I mean, I guess technically a beast like Shaq could just dunk and be just like the violent. I'll tell you what, the injuries would be through the roof. There'd be broken hands and fingers and arms, guys landing on each other's head on the floor.
It would have to be a thing where, like, they would had to have raised the hoop up to, like, maybe 12 feet to be like, look, if you can get up to 12 feet to block a shot, okay, you've earned it. But clearly at 10 feet, we've got half the league on IR with broken fingers. We've got the other half of the league is out with multiple concussions. We don't know what to do, so we're going to raise the hoop up a little bit, and everybody's going to wear like those soft padded rugby helmets or something to protect themselves, and we're just going to make it a little bit harder to goaltend, but we're still going to keep it around
for just an entertainment value. I mean, now that it's in my head, it's ridiculous how much I want to see this.
Well, think about like every, I mean, you would say what, like 98, 99% of the guys in the NBA can dunk. So you're talking about a well-off majority can get their hands up to the rim to be able to block a shot. And you see all the time when, you know, there's a foul down low and some guy takes a shot from, you know, 37 feet away, the one random point guard that doesn't play, like, he hops up and he blocks it before it goes in the rim or whatever because, you know, he can't let the other guy see the shot go in. So it's not like you would just have, I mean, obviously teams when they're playing would just stick the tall guy in front of the basket to make it that much easier. But you've got, you know, four guys around him that could also be jumping up to try and block shots on rebounds or whatever. But, yeah, and like you said as well, Shaq would be a force. Like, he would have been like, wow, I can't believe we found a guy that big, that strong, that athletic, who can dunk over the other tall guys to get us points, and then on the other end, stop all of the other tall guys from scoring because he's just, he's big diesel. He's built like a diesel truck.
You know what I have a vision of? If the guy who was supposed to be guarding the goal wandered a little bit, there would be the one player who has like the 50-footer perfected, kind of like that goal Carly Lloyd scored in the World Cup where the goalie wandered out too far. And so it'd be like the center wanders out to the top of the key. Somebody gets the ball. It's like, oh, my God, I can shoot, and just launches one from midcourt because the guy's not in a position to goaltend.
Yeah, the only advantage I could see is that you probably end up 5-on-4 in either offensive end. If you've got the ball on offense, it's 5-on-4 because there's no need for the big guy really to come running up the court to stand in the same spot on the other side. So you just have him stay by the basket to avoid those moments. So you just have a Manute Bol, a Bol Bol just standing there, just with their hand up in front of the basket, just like, nah, it's not, you're not getting blocked, not scoring. You're just not going to score today. Because my hand, I can fold it backwards on top of the basket. Just, I'm going to goaltend everything.
Yeah, and a lot of people are now talking about the dunk rule, which in college they outlawed for Kareem. And I was reading a story that the inventor of basketball didn't determine that the basket be 10 feet. It's just, there was the only place in the gym where there was a running track where he could hang his peach basket, and it happened to be 10 feet. It's like, that is the most obscure thing I've ever read. I mean, what if it was 7 feet? What if it was 11 feet? Just imagine how the face of this game would have been changed.
If it was, yeah, like, or 9.5 feet or something like that. And it's like, do I round up to 10? 10's a very even number, but it could be 9 and, I don't know, it's maybe 9.25. I should round down to 9 at that point. I don't know. But yeah, ending up with a perfect 10 feet because accidentally I was able to hang a basket here is too perfect.
Well, the article was in the Salt Lake Tribune sports section, and it talked about in 1891, James Naismith didn't envision Dr. J taking off from the foul line and dunking. And in 1940, after the game had been around for a half century, they put together a team of the all-time greats, and the average height of the guys were 5'10". Let me tell you something. In 1940, if you were 5'10", guess what you weren't doing? Slam dunking. So
that would be such a fun thing to do if, like, time travel became possible. It's like, let's not go back and change major world historical events to stop bad things from happening. Let's take all of the people that played in the first ever, like, baseball game. You get the inventor of basketball. You just said his name and I forgot it.
James Naismith.
You take him and you grab all of these guys and you watch the first ever game that's played, and they're thinking, wow, this is perfect. And then you take them to, you know, well, I guess 2019, the last basketball or football game or baseball game that's played, and then like, so did you see this happening? And they see Garrett Cole throwing 103 miles an hour or whatever in the eighth inning with his 110th pitch or something. And, you know, the next inning you got Joey Gallo hitting a baseball to the moon. It's just, did you really think any of this could happen? And their minds just be blown.
Totally. The goaltending rule almost changed the game. So how about this? In 1940, the University of Washington, because there was a game with Oklahoma A&M, now Oklahoma State, where one guy had 13 blocks because he was allowed to goaltend. So the University of Washington played an experimental game to try and eliminate goaltending with 12-foot rims. and it got serious. They actually put it to a vote and said, all right, we're going to keep it like this. And then 3 years later, they enacted the goaltending rule. So that's crazy.
I wonder. I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder how the 12-foot hoop, like, affect, because I feel like if basketball ever realized that, like, 10 feet, let's change things up, or, you know, the ex-NBA, the extreme NBA comes around, and they're like, no, 12-foot hoops. I wonder if they would proportionally, like, make the court also maybe a little bit bigger and a little bit longer so that it proportionally felt the same. Because I feel like if you're just playing with a 10-foot hoop or a 12-foot hoop on regular 10-foot court dimensions, it's going to seem really weird. But if the court's a little wider, your three-point line kind of spreads out a little bit, maybe it's more of a true, like, half-circle length. I wonder if that would be something that, like, guys would be able to work with, being at a new height, seeing that everything else felt the same. I don't know. That, now it feels weird as I talked it out.
Well, one last thing. A note I jotted down, because as much as I've studied the history and enjoy it, I never knew this. We talked about an experimental game in college. Well, it was an exhibition. The NBA played a game with a 12-foot rim in the regular season in 1954. The Lakers and Milwaukee Hawks. It was determined that because of the unusual angle and balls careening straight under the basket, Hall of Fame center George Mikan went 2 of 14, and they were like, well, this stinks, and we're not going to do it anymore. So there you go. That's a big rule change. Adding the wild card in baseball was huge. The foot in the crease in the NHL. Yeah, you guys are coming up with some good ones. Well done. You're doing very well. The new one in golf where you could leave the stick in or not, that just creeps me out. I don't know why. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take our first break of the Wednesday edition of the program. We'll be back with an update and more Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Is it 100%? No, it's not 100%. There could be people that work in this building that maybe are older, maybe have some type of underlying health condition. Maybe they don't come back. But the majority of the people in this building who are healthy, and certainly the 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are healthy, the so-called medical people that are saying the herd of healthy people that have the antibodies may be built up that can fight this, we all need to go back to work.
And that was Oklahoma State football coach / pandemic expert / infectious disease expert / doctor Mike Gundy. No, there's only one thing we need to do: kill this thing and stay alive. Everything else takes a back seat. Yeah, the financial hit is a freaking nightmare. Being dead, you don't recover from. You bounce back from other things. So don't speak unless you're asked about the design of your passing attack, because you're really good at that. Oh, by the way, I wanted to pass this along. This is a new one. Your friends here at KUJZ 95.3 The Score, how about a chance to grab some stimulus money? So as we're trying to flatten this curve, we want to fatten your wallet. Go to our website, 95.3thescore.com. Now, this is a national contest, but hey, it's $1,000. And you can get the details and the rules on our website, 95.3thescore.com. Chance to win a $1,000 stimulus bump. I'm assuming that Nick and I can't win, so where's the fun in that? By the way, you guys, as always, we throw a pitch up there, and you guys take us yard. Some of the substantial rule changes that really impact the sports we enjoy. In 1982, the World Boxing Council, the WBC, announced that they would reduce the length of championship fights from 15 to 12 rounds, and referees were allowed to order a standing 8 count for fighters in trouble. Very good contribution there. Here's one that for a particular generation, probably you're like, if you see like the 1974 Super Bowl between the Vikings and the Dolphins, Larry Zonka scores on a running play. He just barely gets the ball over the goal line, and he almost crashes into what? The goalpost, because it wasn't until the next season that they moved the goalpost back to the end line. So, interestingly enough, originally goalposts were on the goal line. Then they moved back to the end lines in 1927 in college, and they stayed there ever since. But the National Football League moved the goalposts to the goal line in 1933, did not move them back until 1974. But I know it sounds crazy, but passing in the NFL then compared to obviously the last 20 years. I mean, I don't even know why I'm saying 20 years. I mean, in the 90s, you had the silver stretch. You had, who was it, Jack Pardee at when he was a college coach at Houston with Andre Ware just throwing the thing all over the yard. I mean, when you compare that to, you know, especially from my generation, even a little younger, even into the early 80s, they call the 70s the era of the running back, Earl Campbell and Tony Dorsett and the Dolphins with multiple thousand-yard rushers and Jim Kick and Larry Zonka and Mercury Morris and just Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer at that one, you know, Walter Payton, obviously. But, you think about the goalpost impeding the passing game, I mean, the thought in my head right here is Montana to Taylor. He ran a quick slant right. I mean, that's a skinny post. And the goalpost would have got credited with a PD, don't you think? If next time you look at that play, imagine if the goalpost was right in the middle. I'm just trying to think. Andre Ware of Houston was the 87 Heisman winner, and I think he may have been the first college player to throw for 4,500 yards. No, I guess it was 88, because there it is. Or maybe I have the year wrong and I'm just a complete and total putz. I know you guys are thinking, well, yeah, that's a definite possibility. All right, here it is. It was 89. So Andre Ware throws for 4,700 yards and 46 touchdowns, which, you know, at the time was just absolutely crazy. 578 attempts. And interesting, his mop-up guy would go on to be a big-time college player as well and get a look in the pros, David Klingler. But, the goalpost on the goal line. Here's one for Nick. VAR in soccer. How impactful has that been? 284-8571.
Oh,
the Oregon.
Finish up. Well, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. VAR has VAR in soccer has not gone over well. People are very upset about its implications. Like when it showed up at the World Cup, everybody was grumpy because it hit that line when with like baseball reviews at first base, and you're trying to time out if it's a catch at first or a tag at second, and a guy's holding down a tag, and just from the momentum of a guy sliding to the base, and you know, for two frames in super high def slow mo, you see that a guy's hand popped off the bag, but you know, other than that, it kept, you know, he was holding on. It's just this, you know, less than a tenth of a second that his hand was off the bag. It's like, well, okay, the letter of the law says he was being tagged and he was not on the bag, so he's out, but it's also 2/10 of a second. Do you just stay with the call on the field that he was safe because it looked like he was safe, or do you use this technology to hyperanalyze something that nobody with a naked eye would ever be able to see. And VAR has become the same way with reviewing offsides, because everybody thought, oh, every onside offside play, it's got to be plain and simple clear. You're either on or you're off. You draw some lines, you pull out a ruler or whatever, and somebody's onside or somebody's offside. Well, now it's come down to, like, is somebody's armpit offside at this point compared to somebody's shoelace, or which back of the foot are you trying to measure? And it's just like, oh, you know, you'll see the Premier League tweeting out a video like, so-and-so was determined to be offside by less than 0.02 of a centimeter. It's at that point, it's like, what the hell is the point of this? Like, you're taking away something that nobody could know, and even the computer at that point is probably guessing that it's happening. Like, you know, all of the obvious calls where somebody's clearly offside, yeah, those get reversed in an instant. But then when you want, quote, everything to be called by the letter of the law, then you get stuck into these super, super arbitrary discussions about is somebody onside or offside, or were they safe or were they out. It's really annoying. And I don't think people have it hasn't gone how they thought it would, because, like, you're starting to realize the officials on the field are doing a hell of a lot better job than you ever thought they were.
Well, I came up with a soccer rule from back in the day. So if you had to guess when soccer implemented the penalty kick, it was the first time a goal could be scored directly from a free kick. Previously, all other free kicks were indirect. 1891, they changed that rule. You read about that, and I'm like, that sounds like it's probably a modern rule, you know, with the implementation of the World Cup. They wanted more scoring and to make it a little more entertaining. Nope. 1891. And I was like, that's brilliant. I'll tell you, sometimes I do a deep dive down the rabbit hole and I come out and I was like, well, there's 45 minutes of my life I'm never getting back. This was the best 40 minutes I've ever spent. I didn't realize this. Nick, you're a hockey guy. It wasn't until 1943 the puck could be passed from behind the blue line to center ice.
What?
And there was no red line. So you couldn't pass out of your own zone. You had to carry out, or they would blow the whistle and you'd have a face-off.
And oh, my goodness.
Is that unbelievable? So then there was a red line put in that year that divided the ice surface. And, of course, then we had icing, which meant two lines over the goal line touched up by the defensive team, which basically is similar to they don't want goal hanging, or for you to just be able to throw the puck haphazardly down ice to kill if you were having trouble in front of your own net. And then they removed the red line in 2005. So it just – it opened up the game a lot. And then
Do you mean remove the two-line pass? The red line is still there. They haven't – I think they took away the two-line pass, right?
Well, it says now the red line was removed in 2005. You know what the weird thing is? I was watching hockey this year, and now I can't picture the frigging thing in my mind.
There is absolutely still a red line in hockey. I think what they meant was they removed the two-line pass portion.
Oh, right. I misunderstood the rule.
Yeah, because you can obviously pass over as many lines as you want to, and other than determining onside and offside and then icing, that's kind of the only reason they're there. So, yeah, there's still a red line kind of determining all of that.
Yeah, I misread it, and I was trying to take notes really fast. And one final hockey note, they altered the rules when it comes to equipment. Curved sticks, which are only about 50 years old, and they had to limit the curve because especially if you played street hockey with the plastic, you bend that sucker and you could just whizz. It's not really safe how – you know, you could really sling the thing and lift it as compared to a more straight stick.
Yeah,
and then
When I played, I wasn't when I started playing high school hockey, I was a very, very tiny kid, so I didn't need a stick that was that had a ton of flex in it, because I wasn't strong enough to actually use like the proper adult sticks with like a 95 or 110, something like that, which are, you know, kind of like what the pros use because they're strong and they're professional hockey players. So I have this super tiny, like, you know, almost youth categorized stick at like 75-80. And one of the other kids on the team used it at practice one time. He's just like, let me just take a couple shots here. And he unloaded some slap shots with my stick, because you could just, it wasn't fair. It was like hitting a tennis ball with a metal bat. And it's just like, I can't believe that my stick can actually do the things I envision it doing. It's just somebody else is doing it.
All right. No, that's a good one. And somebody just on Twitter, aluminum bats in college softball and baseball, and I guess scholastic baseball. So yeah, that made a difference as well. All right, let's take a break. We will come back and we'll pay homage to the bell. We'll have dueling crunch exchanges coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
Young teacher. Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Coaches, managers, umpires, bus drivers, people who are cooking the food, hotel workers. We can go on and on and on about the number of people who have to abide by this plan to make it work. And the discipline that would take is so extraordinary that I think a seamless summer in which games are played and a player doesn't contract coronavirus, or someone involved doesn't contract coronavirus, is really unlikely.
That's Jeff Pass in ESPN. And the logic that no one will pass the disease on under this kind of bubble boy plan. But we'll get to that another time. But Nick, do we need to ignite the bell here? Take that as a yes.
That's right. It's time for the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up Crunch Time on a Wednesday. It's one of the few things that helps me remember what day of the week it actually is. So I bring up a prospectus from the world of sports. Steve then tells us if he's buying, selling, or pending, and Steve is going to do the same to me as well. I'll begin. While I test the boundaries every day on the old adage, there's no such thing as a stupid question. This might be in the time for sports where we start a new adage. There's no such thing as a stupid idea. All of the big four sports leagues, NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL, have floated out the idea of playing their games in, like Jeff Passan was talking about, an isolated place, from small towns that haven't been as affected by the coronavirus to big cities that have the infrastructure to hold 30-something teams in one place, or even in one extreme, in actually the case of a stupid idea, NBA teams playing on cruise ships. Major League Baseball is the latest team to announce their plan by bringing all of the players back to Arizona. They'd play 7-inning doubleheaders. Players get to sit in the stands so they can socially distance, and the players are kept in isolation when they're not playing. There are a ton of issues with this. What happens if a player tests positive? How do you handle the heat of the desert when it's 100 degrees at 8 a.m.? And how exactly do you schedule 15 teams playing doubleheaders against each other for 3 straight months? These are all the things that I'm glad I don't have to worry about, and these are just ideas, and you need to have a starting point. But this isolated city, biodome, super complex is the one thing that leagues have seemingly stumbled upon as a way to get their sports done. There have been rumors of Vegas being used in the NBA, the NHL using some sort of Olympic Village setup, maybe somewhere deep in the woods in Canada. Even with the NFL, the idea of finding a couple of big fields out in the Dakotas and painting some lines on them. How much trust, if this idea is used, can be put into players of actually staying in their rooms when they're not playing? Do the pros of limiting travel across the country outweigh the cons of exposing all of these players by having them together? Is this our only hope, or are we not creative enough to find a new, better, right answer? The prospectus. The only way sports will be able to be played is on large multi-field complexes with all the teams there.
Well, first of all, this whole concept, all I keep thinking of is Kyle Walker, and these guys can't be trusted, and they're either going to go out or they're going to have somebody come in, and it's going to cause this thing to explode. So I'm going to just sell. All right. One of the oddest stories during this pandemic has been NBA players claiming, I can't practice. I don't have a basket at my residence. From Giannis in Milwaukee to a couple that Rachel Nichols was talking about on ESPN. So I went online and found every size, every make, every model of basketball hoops for either delivery or pickup. It's a basketball hoop. We're trusting people to make food that we deliver and ingest. You could get a polycarbonate that does not go in the ground. It's adjustable. Delivery is cheap and it's easy to set up for about $200. The prospectus. The players making this claim are creating an issue they could fix with a click and a debit card.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye. The only thing I might say is I don't know how many of these guys live in actual homes as compared to maybe an apartment or some sort of townhome where maybe they don't have as much space as they want. Like, I'm not quite sure how much room a Giannis Antetokounmpo actually needs to be able to work on a shot. But if even if it's just free throws or jump shots or something, like, yeah, you can be able to find a hoop there. So I think I'm buying that. They're creating a problem by doing nothing?
Yeah.
All right.
Playing. All right.
Next up for me, the big question after where the games will be played is what the NHL and the NBA need to figure out is what they're going to do with their regular season. And the NHL teams have played somewhere from 71 to 68 games, and there's questions about how you deal with everything leading into the playoffs. Teams are just kind of all over the place. Is it points percentage? Do you try and play games to get everyone to the same number of games played before starting the playoffs? And NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman said yesterday that finishing the regular season, quote, may not be possible. That seems to make the most sense. If the season is going to have a 2-month long pause before games begin again, and then you're going to go into your off season, you can't go from having half the team starting training camps and the other half playing some of the most grueling type of hockey ever, which is playoff hockey, and then there's a very small turnaround right into the regular season. Like you've been talking about for a couple days now, getting started is going to be good, but the real important thing is the ending date, because when we have an ending date, we can figure out the starting date. Now, if you just end the season where it is, teams like the Calgary Flames, who are 1 point ahead behind the Winnipeg Jets, but a thousandth of a point ahead of them, would be in the playoffs. And that's kind of a weird oddity that's going on with teams playing the wrong number or an unequal number of games. That feel of playoff hockey before the playoff comes with the hunt for the final playoff spot is a great thing, and maybe you would instantly have playoff hockey without it being playoff hockey. But Bettman's making an unpopular opinion, and he'd be more than likely saving the next season being played in full as well, and it's not like he can be hated anymore. So the prospectus, the NHL should jump right now into the Stanley Cup playoffs, canceling their regular season.
I think, and I've said before, I'm more concerned with the end date than the start date. I'm all about if you can get it in, and you say that in 6 weeks, you could fire it up. Yeah, do it. I'm buying that. All right, some broadcasters are looking for ways to fill time and are now calling the action of videos fans send in. The Met broadcast team of Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling called a video game matchup between the Mets and Astros, and they did not hold back. Cohen joked, "The crowd was so silent, it feels like they're playing in a library, and that means any sound that might be emanating from the dugout, say the sound of a trash can being banged, would be quite formidable." So the prospectus, incorporating busting Houston's balls into a fake broadcast, is spot on and just what we need right now.
Absolutely, yes. Which, if any team like has the least benefit, the least and the most benefit of fans not being there, it's the Astros, because one, fans won't be booing the ever living crap out of them, but two, any kind of cheating or buzzing or banging that they've got going on is completely out in the open because everybody would be able to hear it.
All right, I believe that's about a wrap. Could we safely say that?
Yes.
Great. All right. 4 o'clock hour, bottom of the hour, we will talk to a different person than me and Nick. Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network will join us. Hang tight, Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
If you surround yourself with turds, you're headed towards Turdville.